Yeah, I don't know if it's a super interesting story, but when we got the archive of the game, the multiplayer turns out to be a totally separate executable. It was built off of a branch of the code that was older. There were multiple versions of it that we didn't know which was the original version to use.
Yeah.
Long story short, it's best to scrap it and start from scratch, so we'll build multiplayer from scratch. Trying to figure out what it is, whether it's going to be a co-op couch multiplayer or something different. But
that'd be cool to do something different. Yeah.
We want to do it right, so time being prohibitive, we'll get it done, but it'll be after lunch.
What do you got to say, John? You're cooking on something. I see you.
So was it done right the first time?
No.
John, what is it like to be living this Groundhog's Day of making Ghostbusters the video game again?
It is somewhat surreal to the excitement of it when it was launched, announced was great to see.
Yeah.
10 years later, I think I'm the only one on the panel that worked on the game, so probably the only one alive that worked on the game 10 years later. But like, just to see the excitement, the fact that people will have a fond memory of it and they're excited to see it again on the new systems. It is weird to be at an arm's length distance from it.
Yeah.
After going through the wars of getting it done, but it's super exciting.
And that's the thing. Take me back then. Not even 10 years, because 10 years is when it released. I know it went through quite the journey to get released under the Atari label. Where is the idea of Ghostbusters, a video game, actually being?
It started on a fall day in 2006, shortly after the Simpsons Hit and Run. We were talking about what my area would do again, and they said that, is there a particular game you wanted to make? And it was just easy, it was Ghostbusters. Since I played Ghostbusters on the Commodore 64, I wanted to make it.
Hell yeah.
So as soon as they gave me any kind of opening to pick the game I wanted to make, it was always going to be Ghostbusters. Which, the reaction of that was, from marketing, of course, was, there's no new movie, there's no excitement, there's no consumer products at that point.
There's no cartoon.
You're stupid. But we pushed, and we talked to Sony. It was a fairly dormant license at the time. They weren't doing much with it.
And where are you working when you're having these conversations?
Vivendi.
Okay. So everybody remember Vivendi? Yeah. Yeah, okay, you're old. We're old.
That was part of the transplant, so Box Interactive became, that's where I was working on The Simpsons, they were sold to Vivendi.
Yeah.
And they're tired, so it became Vivendi, and then Universal separated from Vivendi, just came a giant French company.
Yeah.
And ended up selling to Activision when it did those pieces was Alpha.
Well, yeah, don't get ahead of yourself.
Throw up your mind.
So you pitch Ghostbusters internally, it's a dormant license state, but everybody's just letting it happen. They're like, whatever, this guy wants to make Ghostbusters, let it happen.
No, they said no. So we went to two green lights internally with the CFO, the head of marketing, and the CEO, and then we were declined twice. And then the last time we went in there, Pete wanted and I at the time, we filibustered and wouldn't stop talking. We kept answering our own questions before they could say no for about 45 minutes. And the CEO, Bruce Hack, literally said, if I give you $800,000 in 4 months to prove a prototype, will you shut up? And we said yes. And that's literally how Ghostbusters was born.
That's awesome. That is awesome. The no-quit attitude of Ghostbusters shining through in you.
The fact that we would not let them answer any questions. Like, we talk about the budget, we talk about the scope, we talk about the developer. Before they could open their mouth, we just answer the question for them and move on.
Yeah. So once you get $100,000 in 4 months to make it, is there that oh crap moment of now I actually have to make the Ghostbusters game?
Yeah, well, the first one was like, can we do Ghostbusters right from the fans' point of view, because it's such a cherished license. The second one is, can we do right by the talent?
Yeah.
Because they're as much about whatever the IP is, Sony or Columbia or as anybody. So it was really about what's the core mechanic of what makes that game great. And it really came down to two things. It came down to humor and a fishing mechanic, rod and reel.
Yeah.
And the resistance of that and the ghost trap and stuff like that. So that's really what we set out to find. We talked to a lot of developers, and then Terminal Reality, who was a developer who ended up working in the game, came in with an Iraqi war simulator game, which
you're like, this is Ghostbusters.
I know.
If I've ever seen it.
I've never seen a bridge to Ghostbusters, is it? But it was a physics-based engine.
Yeah.
And it showed a lot of damage. And in the meeting, we were looking at each other like, this, obviously we're not going to buy this particular game, but they would be the perfect fit to work on the Ghostbusters prototype. So we had them work on it, and because their engine is physics-based, and we really designed. The humor around the prototype was all around the executives of Vivendi.
Yeah.
Every time Dan or Bill's character, who's done some likes, they would reference people that were going to be in the room for Greenlight.
Oh, play to their ego. That's how you get a game made.
Well, the whole elevator sequence between Dan's and Harold, they were like, well, it's going to cost, you know, X amount of dollars to make the game. And there's like, they use the name of the CFO and say, there's no way he's going to pay for it. There's no way the marketing's going to like it. So We figured if we could make them laugh in the room because we're making fun of them or talking about them, that they would say yes, and it worked.
So then, what's the next step? You talk about doing right by the fans, but also doing right by, you know, Dan and Harold and Bill. Was the plan always to get them on board? Because that seemed like such a dream, right? To somebody like myself, a huge Ghostbusters fan, you know, when you guys came out and showed this, you're like, we have everybody. It, and I remember interviewing Dan Aykroyd about it. He was like, for all intents and purposes, this is Ghostbusters 3. Like, was it always the idea that you were going to be able to get him, or did you have fallback plans, or were you going to have new characters?
We had a fallback plan to use current actors at the time that were in comedy movies, but they were always the goal. So we went to Sony, Mark Kaplan was here at the time, and we said, will you help us connect with Dan and Harold to start with, and Ernie, and he said no.
How did this game get made?
They didn't have a relationship at the time. Ghostbusters, Dan had tried to make movies for several years, and they didn't happen, so there was a lot of politics behind that. So at the venue, Bruce Hack again, the CEO, gave me 2 weeks and as many plane tickets as I could use to get Harold and Dan to say yes. So the first thing I did is I flew to Chicago to talk to Harold and convince him, and then he was somewhat reluctant to do it until we talked to Dan, but he was interested enough for us to go approach Dan. And we met Dan. We flew back home and met Dan at House of Blues when it was there on Sunset. And we met with him and we showed him the early work. And he was in from second one. Like, he got it. He knew exactly what we were trying to do. He says, we can re-engage a fan base that's dormant. We can create a new generation of fans. And then we went to the office, the set of The Office, where Harold was directing an episode. And we sat in the waiting room of the office set and we showed him the demo.
So, anyway, I mean, at any point, do you look around and you're like, how the hell am I talking to the Ghostbusters and I'm at the office and what's going on?
It was very surreal. And he's very kind. And it was just like, no, I never looked around because we were so frantic to get them to say yes.
Right, you're running out of time.
So we can move on to Bill. And Dan was in right away. Dan was in. Harold really liked what we were trying to do. We thought this is a thoughtful approach. It is a violent thing. It isn't just a button masher. It's going to have a story. It's going to have humor is big to both of them. The pacing of humor, how it's going to work, and that's one of the decisions that we made early on in the game design is you'll never play as one of the Ghostbusters because you'd rather watch the Ghostbusters have that connection, that timing they have with each other. So we pull back and you play a nameless recruit, so you'll have to watch them. And that was a big selling point for both of them to deliver on the humor and the pacing and the punchlines that they wanted in the game.
And so then the big question, Bill Murray. The movie industry can barely get Bill Murray to do anything. Somehow you got him in a video game.
Bill is an interesting.
Remember, this is a panel just for you guys. Well, he's recording it for his own personal use, but no one's recording it or streaming or anything. Give me the dirt.
Bill's an interesting person. Obviously, super talented. Very hard to get a hold of.
Yeah, he's got that 800 number, right?
He has an 800 number. I called it. 6 months went by with no answer. I called it again. I called it every 6 hours during the work hours. Then he finally called back and left a message in my work thing saying, stop calling me. And then we said, hey, you know what? We want to meet with you about the game. How about we meet on a golf course? We'll play golf. We'll show you because he's an avid golfer. He said, that would be great. It's $1,000 a hole. I'm going to take your driver's license before you start. I laugh. Dan says he's serious. Don't do it. So we didn't do it. But yeah, it took us, I think, through the project, of the 3 years it was in development, our first conversation with him directly about the game was almost 2 years in.
Wow. So late in the game.
Yeah.
Was the plan, if he couldn't do it, to just use a soundalike?
The plan was, because of talking to marketing, if we didn't get Bill, the game would have closed down.
Oh my gosh.
Whoa. Yeah.
Because the Walmarts of the world and the Best Buys of the world, the Targets of the world, the GameStops of the world, who's a huge supporter, but if it's not the original cast, if you don't have Bill, like, what does it matter?
Wow, that's crazy. Yeah. So are you just, like, constantly with this anime sweat drop walking around? Like, is it going to shoot a drop?
It was very tense last
year. Your family's here. Like, they're their entire livelihood on the line.
I don't think they saw me during the production of the Ghostbusters. I think they referred to me as Uncle Dad at that point. But, like, it was as stressful as we could possibly get because we could not get him to focus on the game. He's doing other things. He's doing movies. The game wasn't a priority for him because the IP wasn't a priority for him at the time. He had fondness of it, obviously, but he just not something he was interested in doing. And Harold and Dan tried to call him several times to get him on board. He would talk to them sporadically, but it was just a process to get him to trust. I think most of it had to do with trust that this is going to be worthy of his time.
Yeah.
So it was. We we pulled a lot of shenanigans at the end to get him in, and the only time...
Wait, what are the shenanigans you pulled?
There's just shenanigans, Paul. So, like, so we had the tell full disclosure, turn off the camera. We had hired the original mayor from
Ghostbusters
to the game to play the mayor, and then we decided, like, you know what? I was driving to work one day because it's LA and it takes me 2 hours to get anywhere.
Of course,
I was like, you know what? Like, what if we replace the mayor with Dan's brother?
Oh, Bill's brother.
Bill's brother, Brian Doyle, and then we bring him in to show him his character. And the thing, if he likes it, then he'll tell Bill that the game's great, and then we have a shot at it. So we did that. And
you fired the mayor of New York from Ghostbusters in a weird valiant attempt to get Bill Murray on board.
Yeah. The funny thing about the mayor always was, like, as bad of a mayor as he was, and he almost destroyed the whole city, he got reelected for the second movie, right?
Well, sure. He saved the lives of millions of potential voters.
That's a warning for Trump. Yeah. So the we did that. We brought him in. He came in. He looked at the character. He loved it. We walked through the whole storyline. We had a way big dog and pony show. And as he was leaving, he stopped and turns like, do you do this for every... like bit part? We're like, oh yeah. I mean, every actor, everybody we came in and did, yeah, he said, okay, he's like, did you do this so I would go tell Bill that it's a great game and he should do it? And we're like, yeah. And he says, well, I'm gonna go see him in a half hour.
Nice.
So the next morning we got a call from our legal department that said that Bill was in.
Oh my gosh.
As long as his brother was in, he'll do it, he'll support it. And I don't think there's been a dog pile of people celebrating at a video game company a long time, but that was it, because it saved the game, because we were down to weeks before we would have to not continue funding the game.
Yeah,
and we were halfway through development of the game, but yeah, once he signed on, it was all systems go, then everybody was on board, everybody was excited. It wasn't the end of the drama.
I was going to say, from there, it was smooth sailing, no huge problems, right?
Correct.
That was not true at all.
Yeah, the only cast member I think that we wish we would have got, because we got everybody we went for, it was Rick Moranis. So yeah. We went to him numerous times. He said he was retired, he's not going to do it. He did send us a long email saying if there's anything he would do it for, it was this, but he had promised his family that he wouldn't work as much anymore, so he couldn't do it. But that was the only one. Bill really pushed for us to get him and actually called him directly, too.
Oh, wow. But then, you have everything. You have it all lined up. You got these lines, you got everything banked, everything's going really, really well. It's going to happen. Ghostbusters has happened. You got your Game Informer cover. I'll never forget that Game Informer cover. So sexy. If you're too young, video game magazines used to be a thing. And they would come with news and previews and break things. And Game Informer came with this slick, glossy black cover with just the Ghostbusters logo on. And I freaked out. I ran around IGN freaking out. Got in a fight with Nate Ahern about who would review it. And I was like, go bring your jumpsuit in. Bring your Ghostbusters flight suit, and we'll see who's reviewing this game.
The cover was a huge debate because they wanted that on the cover.
Yeah.
And we, the development team, just thought there's nothing better than the logo on a black background. There's like people will just instantly turn the page. So that was a fight for sure with
Andy McNamara.
Right. Right.
Yeah, you know what I
mean? With characters. Wait, he's not here, is he?
No, Andy's not here. I think he's still on a plane right now. I saw him tweet about it. 43. But you get going. Everything's fine. When do you realize everything's not fine, the company's going to be sold, everything's going to hell? And I'm sorry to bring up all the bad memories.
There's good stuff. I would say just before Alpha, everything was really working well in the game. We were hitting
what timeline-wise, what year are we in?
Late 2007 or early 2008, we heard rumblings, and then... as we were approaching Alva, the team was really working hard, and then we were given the voiceover for all the actors.
Oh, so they weren't even in the can?
They weren't in the can yet. And then we heard rumblings, and we heard that Activision was going to merge with Vivendi, which ended up not really being a 50-50 merge,
yeah.
Or like a 90-10 merge, but like we'll take Blizzard. So, but then that really hurt the game badly, as we talked about earlier. Is like that team was at Alpha, and they were working very hard and everything was well done, and then...
And so real quick too, sorry, yeah. And I'm not trying to sidetrack you. For people in here who don't consume video games like we do, and what is Alpha? What does that mean for someone?
It's basically everything's representative of the game, not finished, or it could be missing dialogue, but it has to have placeholder.
Sure.
So there's a footprint of the game, but the gameplay and bugs and polish needs to be worked on. But it's the complete footprint of the game, plays from beginning to end, but it can have missing assets.
Gotcha.
I.e. the voice.
Alright, so we're at Alpha. We're approaching Alpha.
Yeah. So we're negotiating for the song. We're negotiating to get the actors into the studio and record. And then we basically, Activision told us that they're going to kill the game. They don't want it. This is not something that they, this is, we recap, this is the third time in the game's history it was killed.
Really?
Yeah.
What were the first two? When nobody would let it out of the crib?
So after the prototype was successful, we moved into production, they brought in a new, I thought I was passing out. They brought in a new head of development who did, again, the same story. There's no movie, there's no good products, there's no reason for this.
Old school licensing of video games, right?
They killed it. We called France. We complained. They brought it back. And then we had a new...
thank you. Thank you and your people.
The Vandy Water Company helped save it. So, like, then they brought in a new chief of creative who wanted to cut the budget by a third and make it a $9.99 game.
Oh, my God.
And put it out. So we had to deal with that for a good 2 months. And then that's when Dan and Harold really went to bat for us.
Really?
Yeah. They said, basically, we're out if you're going to do that. This is... The political debate, sorry Dave for talking about this, was like we pushed this to be Ghostbusters 3.
Yeah.
From day one, we wanted the cover to be the 3.
Oh, wow, can you imagine?
And Dan and Harold like, yeah, and then Sony's like, no. there could be a third movie. And then it became a battle between the talent and us and everybody else, but it ended up just being Ghostbusters, the video game. But to Dan and Harold, especially later, it's like, this was the third movie. This was the last time they were all going to work together. I think they knew it at the time.
Yeah.
This is the finishing of the story that they wanted to tell because they helped craft the story. But to see that all that falling apart because of a merge with Activision was very difficult. So there was a good 4 months where the developer and us were just didn't work on the game. It just sat there.
Jeez Louise.
Yeah, so Terminal Rally had moved on to, I think they were going to do Star Wars Connect.
Sounds right. Yeah.
With the dance thing? Is that the right dance? Yeah. so they started pre-production of that. I left the merge. But then it was really Dan and Harold that championed it. So Dan called me and said, how do we get, we can't let this go. We have Bill, for Christ's sake. And we have all this good momentum and the fans are behind us. How do we save this? And so Dan and Harold hired me to help evangelize that with Vivendi. And then Atari actually came in and picked up the game.
So wait, they hired you?
They paid me directly to keep producing the game,
okay,
and evangelize for them on their behalf to make sure that, the game gets sold, the game remains the same quality level, and B, that their involvement is with somebody they trusted at that point, because this really, the relationship is all about trust. We can take care of IP. We're only renting it, right?
Sure.
It's their universe, right? I mean, when we take care of it, do we respect the humor, which is very difficult to get across? Do we know the combination between fear, paranormal, and comedy, which we did, we learned, and then so they really want to make sure that the game that they signed up for
is what actually
was actually shipped.
Yeah. That's crazy, and that's the thing, everybody. Remember, Activision, when they let this property go, the reason they said, and I'm not trying to, like, attack Activision, but remember that their thing was, it's not annualizable. And who's laughing now? Because 10 annuals later, we're putting the game back out. You know what I mean? Think all the money they left.
Yeah, I think they made a game.
We don't talk about them. All right, there's a lot of Ghostbuster games that came after Ghostbuster video games. We don't talk about them. not a lot of reasons to get out there. So you now go to Atari. They're going to publish it. Where are you working at this point then? Because you got hired to evangelize, but are you just a freelancer?
Yeah, working from home for Dan Harrell.
Oh, wow. Okay, that's kind of cool.
Yeah. It's stressful, yeah.
Sure. Yeah. How often are they checking in on this project?
Dan every other week, Harold daily.
Wow.
Yeah, Harold sent an email like, what do you need? What are we doing here?
That's a turnaround, right, from when you were talking about where you originally approached him in Chicago. He's like, I don't know.
I think once they saw what we were doing and the fact that they had a hand in this, there's a lot of great writers on this, but like they had a hand in the story and we were doing it right and the mechanic of, you know, catching a ghost and the stress of trying to get in the trap,
totally.
It all worked. We brought it back as many of the cast members as we possibly could. Outside the mayor, and then
so, who you had, and then fired.
to be fair, we're like, we'll give you a separate role. He's like, no, I'm the mayor.
Slams the phone down.
Yeah, you've been impeached. it's just a lot of that. So I think once they saw that, there's a big momentum from their point of view to get this done. And when Bill says yes, it's eye opening for even them, right?
Because sure.
He for a long time he didn't want anything to do with. And then Ghostbusters.
Yeah, and that was, I remember those days, the dark times as a Ghostbuster fan, right? You're like, oh man, please do something. Which is why this, again, such a fever dream for me. You're like, I can't believe this is actually going to happen. It's actually going down. And then when I remember when you guys came by IGN and demoed it, and I was like, it's actually good. This is, and that's helpful. You know what I mean? I wasn't expecting that.
It would have been so much better if without Activision. I mean, probably because we shut down at Alpha, right? 6 months they were working on. There's a lot of things that were scheduled to be in the game that made the cut.
How does that work? I mean, because even I would be rusty on that. Like, you shut down for 6 months when you're at Alpha. When you come back, you're talking about having the footprint. You're like, well, we don't have as much time anymore. We don't have as much money. We have to cut this, that.
Yeah, there wasn't. Atari wanted on its original date, so that 6 months closer for us in development time. And getting a team to, like, who's crunching, you know, 20, 18 hours a day to get it done with huge passion behind it to say, sorry for the last 6 months. Yeah. Let's get going.
Yeah,
and they're just not either into it. They moved on to other things. They've left the company. It wasn't in their mind share.
Yeah.
I was going to say, you probably had different developers on it, like engineers and artists. Yeah. That had switched and changed. And
yeah, the only person, the creative director and the art director were the only ones really remaining. The lead engineers had moved on. But, like, we did as well as we could to put it back together. But, yeah, I think it cost us quite a bit of quality that we would have had if we just would have kept rolling. Because they were really, like, they got it. And all the feedback we were getting from everybody, and including Dan and Harold giving feedback on the videos, was all going into the game.
That's been the craziest thing, I think, as a video game industry member, right, who covers video games for a living, but then also being a diehard Ghostbusters is my number one franchise thing. Seeing what you guys did with that video game reverberate throughout Ghostbusters fandom, right? Like, what you're talking about, the struggle, the real mechanics of it. Like, as soon as I got Ghostbusters World on my phone, right, it was like, oh, totally, I get it. Can I slam? I can slam. And I remember that being such a intuitive new thing you guys had in the game back in the day, let alone when you're like talking about like boson cannon and like you know, all the different like permutations of the proton pack. It was the same way, where that's been put into the comics, that's been put into the cartoons, that's been put into the Ghostbusters World stuff. Like, it's all over the place.
You know, the weapon system was great because it became canon because of Dan. We went through the fishing mechanic. The prototype was the ballroom, right, from the original movie.
Yeah.
You can catch Slimer, and because it's a physics engine, you're able to destroy everything. I was like, oh my god, I can destroy this whole thing while I'm catching the ghost. And then the characters were soundbites at the time, but they're just making jokes left and right as you do it. But Dan asked for, like, give me the class system for what a shooter is, and I will come up with a class system for how those work in Ghostbusters.
Wow.
So we sat with him, and Harold helped name them, because he's the science. So, like, if you guys don't know, Dan's a big believer in the paranormal. Harold wasn't. So that's why Ghostbusters worked so well. They would play off each other, and then roll their eyes at each other, and battle, and that would become the humor at each level.
Yeah.
So I think doing that helped with the gamer market, and it helped like expand what the Ghostbusters tool set really was and what it could do.
Yeah.
Because people not only could, like, either not just only read about it or see it, they could play with it, and they could see the end result of what it's supposed to do. And that they were instrumental in helping us create those.
So, at what point in this giant process did you have a chance, you think, to breathe easy? Was it not until the game was actually shipped, it was on shelves, the reviews were posted, that you're like, all right, fine, it's done. I can sit back and look at this and enjoy it. Like, was Ghostbusters a four-letter word for you for a while?
I don't know if I breathed. It was when Bill recorded. Because, you know, yeah. Atari cut everybody out the last 4 months. They not to trash Atari, but they let everybody go that was on the game, that was working on the game.
Really? I didn't know that.
We'll finish it ourselves kind of mentality.
Oh, God.
So, but like, because I think they were running out of money at the time. But like, when Bill recorded, we knew that we had all the assets to make the game.
Yeah.
Because getting him in the studio was just as difficult as getting him to return an 800-number call.
How did you finally get him in? Did you have to do something, a breadcrumb trail with his brother? You call Bill, like, your brother's in the VO booth, he needs help, you gotta get down here.
Well, yeah. Well, he said, let's record in Arizona. We said, great. We went there. We didn't record in Arizona. He said, great, let's record in South Carolina. We went there. It was great. We didn't record in South Carolina. We went to Hawaii, which wasn't a bad trip.
I was going to say, wow, man, let me get the violin out for this story.
We didn't record, and then we told Dan and Harold, like, if we don't record by this date, we're killing the game. And so they called him. It wasn't like he was being good. He's just difficult to get the – he's a busy guy, right?
Sure.
So then we said he called and said, I'll do it in New York on these 3 days. He has 1,100 lines in the game. We went to New York. We were shaking, physically shaking in the sound booth because it was 10 o'clock. It's like 10:30. He's not there. And then he walked in, and he was there. The engineer was a little nervous because it was Bill.
Yeah.
Because Bill can, you know, go off on wild tangents and do things he wants to do. But he, the first day, he was great. He recorded every line. He was into it. He's the Bill Murray that you wanted him to be that day.
Yeah.
And the good news is I'm a big fan of baseball. He's a huge fan of baseball. So when it got awkward, we just kept bringing up baseball.
You know the way to his heart.
Yeah. And if everybody knows, he does not work at all during the Cubs are in the playoffs. He does not work at all during the Cubs playoff run at all.
Wow. Well, I remember when he got honored at that Mark Twain thing, right? Like, yeah. It was if they hadn't won the night before, he wouldn't have been at his own, like, award ceremony, because he can't miss it. Which, as a Chicago native, I respect.
Love in Cleveland, so they beat the Indians over.
Well, you know, whatever. You should find yourself. Maybe you should change from an insensitive mascot. Anyways, the point I was going to jump to next was...
Duly noted.
Was there... ever plans for more? Did you want to? I mean, obviously, did you want to do more? You want to do more, but was there an idea? Were we close to ever getting another Ghostbusters game like this?
Yeah, there was a design doc and a story synopsis for a sequel, and a third one had a synopsis.
Wow.
But we worked with Harold at the very end of this development cycle in Chicago and Dan to create what would the next game, where would we take it? Because obviously, if you did play the game, you can't drive the Ecto 1, so we want to make sure you drive the Ecto 1, which is its own fiasco. And then and do more things and then expand past.
For the record, it took Batman 3 games for us. You know, these Arkham games, it took us 3 games to get behind the wheel. So you're fine, don't worry.
The car was a huge headache because, like, turn around, everybody's like, we gotta drive the car, we gotta drive wherever I wanna go. I'm like, well, that, no. And then say, well, we're not gonna build a GTA game because I barely had the budget for these guys to do this game. So they did a rail demo, which I think I have somewhere else to send it to you, but like, of the car on rails, and you just, like, move back and forth. It was the worst thing I've ever played. And they spent so the guy that pitched is like, nailed it. he showed the video and it was like, didn't. So we killed that, so you know the play again. The car, screw you was like, oh look, the car's gonna slow follow you for this level.
Yeah, I remember that walking in the streets.
Yeah. Enjoy that. But we had a sequel to be more sandbox.
Okay.
And we have more competitive Ghostbusters team, and they had Dan had given us a list of characters and styles and actors that he wanted to play the special. The franchise teams, they have to come, because New York is as big of a character to them as any of the characters.
Sure.
So everybody would have to go to New York to help save them.
Oh,
there's a team from L.A.
Well, that was the whole setup of Ghostbusters the video game, right? Was the idea that you're bringing in this rookie and it was the first chance at, hey, we're thinking about franchising, we want to bring in new blood.
Yeah.
I remember that being the story.
Yeah, so that was a sequel, and just, you know, Atari just never, ever wanted to do it.
Jerks.
Yeah.
Now, what about Saber? Would Saber like to do this? Another Ghostbusters game?
I think we would. I mean, obviously, our focus right now is to get this thing out the door
and
support it post-launch as well.
Yeah.
I think we're definitely in the market to pitch.
He's being trained. He knows enough not to say to get boxed in.
We love our relationship right now with Sony. It's going well, and we'd certainly be open to doing something like that. We just came off of World War Z, which was a big launch and a big game for us. It's done well, so... it'd be good to put that engine to use for something like this.
Sure.
And talking more and more to John about some of the scripts that are kind of sitting there waiting idle to be developed is interesting. So I wouldn't rule it out that we would make a pitch for it.
That's awesome. You want to go do it? Go do it.
I do it.
Ghostbusters is a franchise that since the movie came out, since the first time I saw it,
Has
been my favorite movie. And it defined my sense of humor as a child. Harold Ramis defined my sense of humor with Stripes and all his movies and Groundhog's Day. Who wouldn't want to live in this universe?
Yeah.
I thought you liked Chocolat. Isn't that your favorite movie?
I don't even know what that movie is.
It was a movie about chocolate. What do they call it? Chocolat? I don't remember it. They had trailers. It's even lovey-dovey. It wasn't my kind of thing. That was what I was about to.
Yeah.
Do you want to watch a trailer here? David, is there a possible way you can bring up a trailer while filming?
Oh, look,
he's got all those files here, too. No, let's see if there is a script in here for the next Ghostbusters.
Are you troubled by strange noises in the night?
Do you experience feelings of dread in your basement or attic?
Have you or your family actually seen a spooky specter or creature?
Funny, one of the stories that come up when you try and do these remastering projects and you go back to the archives like 10 years, like trying to get all the assets, and you think you have them all. Sony sent us all the assets, and Terminal Reality sent us a bunch, and Atari sent us a bunch of code, but it's still missed. It doesn't have everything. And one of the things that was missing from this was the actual core assets from the cinematics and all the cutscenes.
No big deal.
So he kind of necessary. We threw our hands like, well, we don't know how we're going to remaster this and make this 4K and better. Until David said, "Well, contact this guy Chris Rinkowitz, who worked on the original cinematics." And so you take a shot at it and you go, "Hey, Chris, did you work on this? Do you know where this stuff is?" And he literally said, "I think they're on a hard drive I have in a storage locker. And if it boots up and it doesn't crash, I'll work on it. I'll do it for you. And sure as hell, like, he went to his locker and he's like, he brought it up and said, yeah, I still have it all. Don't worry about it.
Wow.
And we cranked them out and they're in 4K now and they look fantastic. So
I can't even fathom. I mean, we talk about it, you know, on Games Daily, kind of funny a lot or whatever, but like trying to preserve video games. And I'm talking about now as we just move to a digital age of a game that requires, you know, to connect to a server like Destiny or something. Like, one day you won't be able to play Destiny anymore. I can't even fathom trying to track down all the code for a video game, let alone a code for a video game that bounced around as much as this thing bounced around. Yeah. Like, is that normal for studios and random editors to have hard drives and weird things stored somewhere with everything?
Yes. Try telling the lead designer, or lead engineer in the game, to give you the code and, in fact, follow it up with it, and you're not working on it.
Well, you save that for later, right? That's like how you fire the mayor.
The archive process is bizarre. I did a game with a Crazy Taxi where we put all these Crazy Taxi assets into a one PSP game, and we asked Sega, so we're contracted to do this, where's the archive, where's the code? Oh, we don't have it.
Yeah,
you have to find it. So again, it was a very similar story. Went through the list of credits, found an engineer that had worked on it, and he's like, I think I have it on a computer somewhere. And sure enough, he had the code to all the Crazy Taxi archives and was the only thing that saved us for doing this. So you never know where these assets do end up.
Yeah, I can't imagine trying to track it all down, keep it all together.
And now, in this case, there were so many parties involved with Terminal Reality. Sure.
You call back to Activision. You're like, hey, we got anything kicking around?
Hi.
Bobby Kotick's like, I got a USB stick somewhere. That might have something in you.
Guaranteed it's not a USB stick.
My one, I mean, big question, right? And I want you guys to have, obviously, a chance to ask questions, too. 2019, that's a pretty broad date. Come on. It's an old game! Where is it?
It'll be fall, for sure.
Okay, fall. Okay, good. Okay.
In an ember-ish month?
Ember-ish. That's not helpful. The fall part was helpful. I'll take it. Ember-ish, kind of insulting, but okay. All right, cool.
Maybe like it'll be early fall.
How big? Like, and this is maybe a stupid question. How big is the team that's working on this right now to get this ready for prime time?
The team is probably about 20-25 right now. Okay. We are actively wrapping up most of the game as we can right now. We want to submit to first party here coming very soon.
Okay.
Most of the stuff is up and running. We're at 60 frames per second. We're 4K. Little things like trying to crunch down the cartridge size on the Switch version.
Sure.
But it's looking good. It's looking good for the most part.
Right. Do you guys have questions out here in the audience? Yes, sir.
This may be another big question, but is there, like you asked earlier about, you know, obviously would you guys consider doing another one, but are there any assets from this game that can be retrofitted, polished, or added to this game post-launch? Because you said you were going to support after with multiplayer. Is there any assets you want to add back in or finish up that wasn't included?
There's some missing parts to it. There's the rumored Thanksgiving Day Parade level, which was, and we were talking about this earlier on. We haven't seen it in any of the archives we have, but if we are to find it somewhere, if it shows up, if we keep digging, I can imagine something we'd like to do is add something like that, an extra level.
Because that's one that never made it to the final game.
No, it was cut.
Okay.
But yeah, the Thanksgiving Day floats come to life.
Nice.
Yeah, they attack everybody. That was cut. There was a drive.
Hey, tell me everything that was cut.
In the rail sequence, Thanksgiving
Day. That's good. Don't put the rail Echo 1 in there.
There was an Ellis Island level that was cut.
Oh, wow.
We did battle Ellis Island, and there was a subway level with the train that we ended up cut.
There was a couple of multiplayer levels, too.
Yeah, there's some multiplayer levels that were cut as well to make sure they hit the date.
Interesting.
Sorry.
So we want to see more multiplayer levels.
No! We want less of multiplayer. As long as it doesn't affect the trophy list, I'm fine. You, sir.
Yeah. Hi, Clayton Stone, kind of funny best friend.
Woo!
Are you able to talk about some of the DLC that was planned but was eventually canceled? And does Saber have any interest in doing DLC for this game beyond just what's in the initial release?
There's no plans for a paid DLC at this point. I think our goal is to, again, if you look at what we've done with World War Z, we definitely have supported the game very well, I think, post-launch with DLC content. I'll be honest, I think ownership of the company has been surprised by the reaction from the fans, the very positive reaction for this game.
For World War Z or Ghostbusters?
For Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
This was a passion project, I think, for myself and John to kind of push this forward at some point.
Good job, guys.
And now that it's done, I think people that were kind of like, oh, I guess we could do this, now they're saying, wow, this could be, like, people are really excited about this.
I mean, frankly, I'm surprised by their action. Because, again, if you don't know me, hey, I'm Greg, and I talk about video games on the internet. Shouldn't introduce myself, that's stupid. But everybody knows me for Ghostbusters, so it's one of the, obviously this comes up all the time, like, oh man, that game was great, blah, blah, blah. The day you guys put this up, like, my Twitter exploded with people doing it. And not only just doing the, hey Greg, look, it's happening, though, I'm so excited because I love the game as much as you did, or I'm so excited because I never played it. And the fact there's really a groundswell of, like, oh, this was a game everybody dug, but you just didn't talk about it.
Total shocker. I mean, yeah. After being in the industry for 25, 30 years, I just, wait, you make the announcement, then you wait for the, all the, hey, you F-tards, what are you doing? It's just you cringe and you wait for
it. Yeah, totally.
And it hasn't been that reaction this time. It's been very positive.
That's awesome.
But the DLC was the plan to be the Thanksgiving Day Parade. There was a Christmas level that was supposed to be about Christmas, and there was the Vigo painting, which was his own casting fiasco, which we were talking about earlier. We called Mac Fonsido to recreate Vigo. We were on the phone, and Dan and Harold was sitting across from me, and he's like, we're like, why don't you recreate it? Can you just give us these 10 lines? Because he commented on the credits right at the end of the game.
Yeah.
He's like, I didn't play that role. And we're like, we think you did. And Harold's like, oh my God, did you not do it? Like, and then we looked, and Harold like, looked at Danny like, no, well, he did it. And he literally did not remember doing the part at all. he called me back. He's like, I thought about it. Talked to my wife. Never did it. And so we sent him a clip of the movie in Paris where he lives, France. And then he emailed back. He's like, well, goddammit, that's me. So he's like, here's what I'll do. I'll take the train into Paris, and you just send me the lines and did it. And then he got to the studio, and then he watched the video again. He's like, no, it's not me. And like, so we talked him through why he was recording that. Great job on the movie. It was really good. It was you. Unmistakable you.
Yeah.
So, he did a great job recording, but it was like a... It was really awkward because Harold did like, get him. He's the Vigo. He's the guy. He didn't do the visual, obviously, aspect of it. As a bodybuilder from Mexico City, I think. Right. Because like,
that was the big... I remember that's, like, the story of Vigo, right? It's like, Vigo, the Carpathian, the guy we know who plays the visage of Vigo, right, went to the movie not knowing he was filmed. Yeah. And he, like, left. You're like, you got to like, oh, my God.
Have you heard his original audio? It's like...
No,
it's
but
not,
I...
Yeah, it's a great actor. But, like, couldn't hear a word he said.
Sure.
Yeah, so... But yeah, sitting in a room with the people are like, call this guy, get him on the phone. You got to keep this authentic. And the guy tell you on the phone he didn't do it. And then the two stars of the movie look at you like, did he not do it? So like, and then there's like this indecision for like 3 minutes about, oh my God, do we have the wrong guy? But then yeah, it worked out. He's in the game. But it was a funny story because I was the most panicked. I saw those two guys. Other than the Bill stuff.
Yeah, that's hilarious.
You want to know? Watch the trailer. A pain point, the biggest thing, is that damn song.
Ghostbusters?
Yeah, getting that rights to that song took all 3 years.
How's that possible? You got a Sony's approval? You got Dan? You got Harold?
He's got one song.
Ray Parker?
Yeah.
I just saw him walking out.
the cost went way down. There's a couple more commas in the original pit, but like, it was really, there's like, what's it going to be used for? If it's used in a commercial, I want this much. If it's used in like weakless, he wouldn't just give us a grant of license and stuff. Everybody had to work hard to get that to work. And like, we can't ship the Ghostbusters game without the song.
Yeah.
And he knows that.
Damn. Ray Parker, cold blooded. Who would have thought? You know what I mean?
The original score was easy. We actually got this like 24 minutes in the game of unreleased score. For the movie.
Really?
Yeah.
I missed that part. I
want
to go to you.
Yeah, I was wondering, where will be some modding tools that will be available at some point?
Will you be modding tools
for
that?
No. Oh, sorry.
So there's no way.
No modding. Sorry. No.
It's okay. We're sorry.
I felt better 2 minutes ago. Now I'm all sad now.
A second ago. Now just for the Ghostbusters video game owners, I'm going to go back here to Blackjack.
I think not too long ago, Rick Moranis did a voiceover for the Goldbergs as Dark Helmet. Any chance of fitting him back in?
That's a Saber question.
We have not reached out to him.
He had his chance 10 years ago. Right? He chose his family.
He was supposed to be a playable character. That was the original
intention. Really?
Then, for a short period of time, it was going to be John Belushi. Because John Belushi was supposed to be in the original Ghostbusters movie, passed away, so we thought, we were going to go to his estate, have him be the playable character.
Oh, wow.
But then we thought, that'd be too much of a distraction, so we just made it this generic. It was actually an associate producer.
I was going to say, not generic, but if you don't know, the guy you play as in Ghostbusters, the video game, is a producer I remember on the video game that I knew so well back in the day.
Ryan French, he volunteered for us to use the back of his head for how many hours a game.
His likeness, too. Like, when you get the spins, it's that's Ryan. That is, it'd be the funniest thing of going to demos for Ghostbusters, and he'd be in the room, and people would, like, see it, and be like, they're like looking back at the screen, looking at Ryan. He's like, just do this.
They made him an action figure too, so he's like super happy about that.
Of course, and he's living the dream.
It's supporting multiplayer or online multiplayer.
You know that? So I asked this earlier. We will not have multiplayer available at launch. Long story short, was the code was not really usable from the original archive. So we're going to be planning to rebuild it from scratch, which is going to take a little longer. So our plan is to come out early fall and then continue to support it afterwards and hopefully have multiplayer at that point.
Awesome.
Thank you, sir.
What's your biggest goal for the game? To, like, for a story, make people have fun, scare people? Scared me as a kid.
Well, yeah, now you're 35, sir, yeah. Scared me as a kid? What are you talking about? What was your aim when you came out for Ghostbusters?
I think when we were working on it, we had three pillars, because usually when you make a game, you have pillars and everything. You defend those pillars against the design. I think it was they were very obtuse. So it was like, it had to be fun, funny, or scary. So every moment, gameplay per square feet, had to apply to one of those things. And going into it, we didn't quite know what that was, that balance between, like, scary or fantastic scary or comic scary. I think we really learned that lesson with the librarian, so we told her backstory and said we went back to the library, and I think the Dan and Harold, even Bill, gave a lot of feedback on that and what the pacing should be, when is appropriate for a joke, what's not a joke. But that was really, it'd be funny or scary was what we were trying to go for. So we really tried to balance the introduction would be scary, the gameplay would be scary, and then there would be funny dialogue in between that would kind of pace that out.
This was a hodgepodge.
Yeah.
There you go. Thank you for your service. I know you're going to retire soon.
All right. As far as, like, storyline stuff went, I came in a little late, but the...
Get out.
with, like, Dan and Harold being, like, helping out with the script and the writing for it, was there any, like, very characteristically Dan Aykroyd insane ideas that he, like, got really excited about and got stories about? Or
Dan's never not excited about Ghostbusters. Like, the way he described it is, like, if you watch the movie, he's like, it's like he and Harold are two different kids in a family at Christmas. He's like, oh, this is great, I love this. Like, he's a super excited guy. And Harold's the nerdy son, and Dan and Bill's the parent. That's the way it's kind of written. They're all upset about how long a video game script is. Harold's like, he watched the video, like, he's really upset and, like, very angry on the phone that it's the size of Lord of the Rings. Because he's like, okay, I wrote a line, go to the door. Like, okay, we need a line if the guy doesn't go to the door. He's like, why wouldn't he go to the door? Well, the player can stay there. He's like, okay, but if the player doesn't touch the handle, like, I have to write a dialogue if he doesn't touch the handle, if he doesn't touch all the permutations he was having. He was struggling with it. But Dan was super excited about the museum level. And the museum coming to life.
Yeah.
And he was super excited, and we had to calm down on the librarian. We went back to the great lady, told her story. But, like, I would say that if Ken super excited on a daily basis, I think in Ghostbusters, every conversation with Dan was a 9.5. He was like, he loves this universe. He created the universe. He's super excited about everything. He's super appreciative that people. He was astounded that there's a group of 100 people that wanted to make this game.
Yeah.
And then actually made it the way the movie, the pace, the way the movie's been. So I think he. He was definitely a driving force. Harold's more calming, like, okay, that doesn't make sense because here's the science of it. And then Dan would argue some fantastical paranormal science that makes it work. And then they would fight it out through email, and then we would get the answer. And then the writers would take that and then turn it into gameplay dialogue. And then they would go back to them for approval.
Jeez. What a journey that's been. Lucian.
I also have a question about the writing of the game. I was curious if you had any funny stories about working with Flint Billy.
There's never not a funny story working with Flint, but no, they were good.
Who's Flint Dilly?
He was a writer we brought on early on. He's a prolific video game writer. Wrote a lot of video games. So we brought him early. He wrote their early treatments. and a couple of the early drafts. But the, as the game development went on, with Bill not recording all his lines for various reasons, and then Dan and Harold's character having to step in and re-record those lines, and some of the levels falling off, we went kind of side. But he was great in the beginning. He was just as energetic to play in the Ghostbusters universe as we were, as anybody was. But he really helped jumpstart him and John really jumpstarted the beginning of it, of taking our enthusiasm and putting it to paper early while we were trying to concentrate on the mechanics in the game. So they were a big part of the early part of the game and getting people to get evangelized behind it and really excited about it.
Awesome. In the way back.
Hey, how's it going? Sorry, I did come in late. There's like that guy.
God dang.
Did you guys talk at all about when the game was released? Or did you talk about multiplayer? Did you talk at all about additional chapters? Sort of like how Valve did a Half-Life 2 additional chapter kind of thing? Anything like that?
So again, it's going to come out fall this year on Switch, PlayStation, Xbox, and PC.
It's like he's testifying in front of Congress.
and we will have, we'll continue to support it post-launch, so.
Thank you.
Just kidding. You said double dipping, what's up? Are you okay? Did you nod off? I know you're very old.
It's tough. What will the price be for the game?
Ooh.
No comment at this time.
But seriously. But,
we have some ideas. I'm going to really waffle on this one. we've studied again what other similar products come out at
sure.
Price point.
This is a tough nut to crack, right? Because you're coming in, you've got this IP now, you've had to pay to get this game over, then, but it is a game that's 10 years old, but how do you do this?
You know, and we're trying to wrap, I mean, we've done a lot of work to improve the visuals in it, from the shadows to the hair to the reflective lighting in it, and then redone all the cinematics, so work has gone in to make the game look better, but we also acknowledge the fact that it's, you know, we haven't added a lot to the new version of it. To that point, I don't think we need to. We got a really good game, and I think we start tinkering with the gameplay and mechanics of it, we could screw things up. So, so you know, the range is going to be, you know, as a broad spectrum, $20 to $40.
Oh, that's great.
And I think ultimately we'll figure out what that middle ground is.
Says that now.
There might be $79.
$79.
$111.
Question, John, that we haven't touched on. I wasn't sure if we'd run into it organically. Whose idea was it to come up with how much money your damage was costing? Because that was such a... we talked about the destructibility of it, but it was so fun and crazy to go through, and then there was the trophy for an achievement of, you know, caused a total... after the obscene amount of money damage throughout the game, or caused barely any. Because, like, when you're going through, if you haven't played, you're destroying stuff, you're knocking out paintings, you're blowing up tables, and there's, a dollar counter going of how much money the Ghostbusters are costing this place.
That was the creative director at Toy Rally, Drew Hayworth.
Really?
He did that. I was visiting, we were having a bad day with Bill.
Were there a lot of bad days with Bill?
We had to fight over a level, so we decided to take a break. We were playing Burnout.
Burnout
on 360.
Yeah.
And he saw the tallying up of it, and he says, and that's why Peck's character approached, he became deeper at that point, because he's the paranormal oversight committee in the game, and he's the one that takes out the insurance policy on the Ghostbusters. And then the damage is reflected, so you get the invoice at the end. So all that came from him.
That's really smart. Yeah. That's really good. Anybody else? Well, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, wait, what?
I just wanted so you talked about the development of this game over a long, long time. How much of game development is really driven by dollars and cents? Like, it's such a creative process. You have fans that are engaged, but you live in the real world. So how does that drive your development decisions for...
I think it's always a unstoppable force versus an immovable object. I think there's creative people that continue to drive for what makes the game great and content, but it always comes down to dollars and cents with the marketing team and the sales team and the executive team. I making games is a contact sport. It's a series of daily problems, usually around money and time and effort, that you try to solve every day. But I think every decision you make has an ROI, and especially these days, and it is a constant frustration, I think, from the creative part of the team to do that. But you have to balance that against a game that doesn't go too so deep in expansion that it can't recoup.
Yeah, to add to that, this is a funny side story. John and I we walked into Sega our first day together in 1994, our first day at Sega. So we've kind of grown up with the same development methodologies and creative beliefs. And I think one of the things we've learned is always design the game that you want. throw everything you want in that game as much as possible, and it's much easier to pare back from there and reduce the scope based off of cost, based off of timing, because you're not going to get everything you want in, with the unlimited budget, but always prepare the game that you ideally want. Build everything you want, throw everything in there that makes the most ideal game, and then you can scale back what makes sense.
I forget who, but I remember there's somebody in the industry who runs around with the adage, right, that like any game you play is only 70% of what the vision was, right? Because there's always stuff on the cutting room floor of levels from vision.
For sure.
Yeah. You have multiple Ghostbusters games on your cutting room floor.
Oh, yeah. We have like, you know, 6 or 7 levels with dialogue recorded that didn't make any game.
Come on, Saber. You got to do this. We got to make it happen, all right?
Sure.
Ladies and gentlemen, Ghostbusters, the video game in a memory in the fall, so get ready for it. Thank you all for your time.